Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining me today. My guest is Bertus Albertsee. He is the founder of an award-winning fitness franchise called Body 20, and he's also the CEO and president of Jet Set Pilates. And he's calling in from Miami, I believe. Welcome to the show, Bertus.
Thank you so much, Marcia. Appreciate you having me on the show.
I'm delighted to have you. And I'm sure you can all recognize that there is an accent there, and we're going to hear a little bit more about that. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you?
Thank you, Marcia. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm from South Africa originally, a beautiful city called Cape Town. I believe it's actually one of your favorite travel destinations. So we shared that in common. Yes, born and raised there, really my entrepreneurial journey started in the university. I started a nutrition company just through the necessity of selling sports supplementation to the athletes. And through that, I developed an 11 network retail shop that I then turned into, you know, a global success, and also founded a franchise brand now a little over 10 years ago called Body 20. Which, to be honest with you, you know, it was kind of a pipe dream. I bought this electromuscle stimulation device in, you know, Dubai, and I thought, you know, people might love getting shocked into shape using electricity, would you believe it or not?
Wow.
I brought that device to the U.S. in 2017 and started my brand out here, and we've got over 400 units in development in the U.S. with Body 20. And since 2021, I joined the Jet Set team to develop the franchise system for them, and it's been an exciting journey. We've got 60 units sold and should have around 20 units open by the end of the year. So very exciting journey to get here where we are.
I would say so. So what is your background that led you into this fitness and franchising industry?
You know, Marcia, you know, like everything happens almost accidentally through our passion.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been a sportsman. I started weightlifting at boarding school because I was bored. Pardon the pun, but certainly that's exactly how it started. And, you know, through weightlifting, I kind of learned more about nutrition and really realized that there's an opportunity here to get into the fitness and health business. And through my passions, I kind of stumbled across the fitness industry. I at university, majored in psychology, biochemistry, genetics, and physiology. So I've got a, you know, comprehensive view of kind of the health and the human body. But ultimately, you know, I failed forward through a lot of learning through every project I've been involved with. And that's kind of how I find myself in the fitness industry and more so in the franchise industry, which is so exciting because franchising, I don't believe there's any more entrepreneurial business out there. We get to start new businesses every month with our franchise partners. And to me, that empowerment of the entrepreneurial spirit is really the key to what gets me up in the morning.
You bet. So we've talked about Body 20, and I just want people to know that that is a website that they can visit. There's a couple of websites that I would encourage people to visit, and body20.com is one of them, and also the other website that you have is jetsetpilates.com. So I would certainly encourage people to visit those websites. I'll make sure I include that in my blog. So I always wonder why people get inspired to do what they do. So what inspired you to start Body 20, and how did you expand it across international territories?
Marcia, it's a great question. And, you know, I started in my living room. Really, I didn't have a business plan. I took the device, and, you know, what I knew is I was inspired by the technology. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with electromuscle stimulation technology, but it's the same technology that people use at a physiotherapist or biokineticist where you get the muscle stim to start activating that mind-muscle connection. And what has happened is the technology has evolved so much to create a full body experience where you can really replace recreational training using electromuscle stimulation. And when I tried it out myself, I was just blown away. I had this light bulb moment where I was like, I can see this replacing weightlifting for people who's interested in strength training. And through that, I just wanted to train friends and family and kind of get their feedback. And that's really how I started. I used to, my girlfriend at the time told me, but listen, this is a very expensive training toy. What are you doing with it? But I was inviting people in just to try it out. I didn't charge them anything. It was just kind of a feedback loop that was created through my, I guess, passion for the technology. And through that, one of my friends said, you know what, I've got an office down the road. It's open. And, you know, my tenant just left there. Why don't you just pull the device in there and maybe you can train clients from there. And the rest is kind of history. Today we've got, you know, over 100 studios open and hundreds more in development. I've got a separate master franchisee and a partners in the U.S. business that are doing exceptionally well. And in the rest of the world, we've developed 6 other international territories with this brand. So really it's a combination, I think, of grit, passion. But, you know, most people think that you need to have full clarity before you take action. I'm a big believer that clarity comes from moving forward, even if you don't see far ahead. You know, if it's very misty and you can't see far, crawl until you can walk, walk until you can run, and run until you can sprint. And that's the way I've approached the business over the last 10 years.
Wow. So you mentioned your background in biochemistry, psychology, genetics, and biochemistry. How did that what was the name of the university you attended?
University of Stellenbosch.
Right. In South Africa, is that right?
That's right. It's exactly right. I mean, if you want to have the best wine in the world, you must visit Stellenbosch Vineyards. I mean, it's one of the best wine farms that you can have. But yes, in the heart of Stellenbosch is the university that essentially makes up the entire small town, but a big sports university as well. So yes, I went to university in the Western Cape of South Africa in a little town called Stellenbosch.
So how did that education influence you in your approach to business?
You know, I think having a sound technical foundation in health and fitness is very important. So I think the foundational learnings I've had through biochemistry and physiology was key for me to understand how the body integrates, right? This, your nervous system, your endocrine system, you've got so many parts that come together. And I think that being in the fitness business, it really does help if you have that technical aspect under your wing as well. I think a lot of people start a business and they don't recognize that. For me, there's typically 3 pillars to be successful in a business, right? Number one, you've got to be able to sell and market the business. Without it, you don't have a lifeline, right? Secondly, you have to have technical proficiency. Otherwise, you're selling or marketing something that you don't know inside out. And then thirdly, and this is the part for me that I had to develop over the years, is my finance and administrative ability in the business. So without those 3 legs, you're going to end up not having a scalable business. And for me, the technical aspect comes from my degree, which I feel has been a very good foundational element to my success.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think that's terrific. What have been some of the biggest challenges, and I'm sure there have been, that you face in growing your business, and how did you overcome them?
That's a loaded question, Marsha.
We've got plenty of time. Share it. We've got lots of time. I'd like to hear this.
Amazing. You know, I think I've learned more from failing than I've learned from succeeding. And I know people have said that, but, you know, it's only true when you go through it yourself that you can truly recognize the value of those failures. And I think some of those failures really has been, I guess, my arrogance in terms of starting a business that I know very little about. And particularly in my early 20s, you know, when you've had some success, you think you can replicate that success with any business because now you've done it all, right? And ultimately what you learn is that there are things you don't know that you don't know. So ultimately it's your humility that will drive you to succeed, but you've got to be asking the right questions. And I used to think that I need to know all the answers. So I was always the smartest guy in the world. And I say that tongue in cheek because certainly I'm not, right? And I'd only realized that later in life that the more you surround yourself with smart, capable people, that also have humility so you can learn from each other and solve problems that are bigger than our own personal individual capacities, that has been by far my biggest learning.
I think that's an important life lesson, regardless of whatever industry people go into. And, you know, humility isn't something we all have, you know. And you mentioned, you know, at 20 you were pretty arrogant, which is pretty young to be so arrogant. But you learned from that that maybe that wasn't going to get you where you needed to be, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I will say, I mean, when you're youthful, I think that you think nothing can stop you. And
right.
I think we've all been there where, you know, we've got that effect of we just know enough to be dangerous, you know,
well,
meaning we know enough
right.
so no one else can tell us anything better.
Well, you get this drive, and clearly, you know, that's internal. That if you did not have that drive, we wouldn't be even having this conversation right now. But you're not 20 any longer, and you've learned over the years. But you have to have that inspiration. You have to have that drive. You have to have that desire. Because without those things, you know, you're just an ordinary person, and you may or may not have success in a business that you've started. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. As we grow older, we become wiser. We become more knowledgeable. We surround ourselves with people that maybe know more than we know so that we can learn. And I think those are all important elements in life, regardless of what field people are in. So what is your role and responsibilities as the CEO and president of Jet Set Pilates?
You know, I'll summarize it by saying, you know, I feel like the cheerleader in the team, where I find talented people and I'm there to really empower them and support mm-hmm. them in doing their best work. And that would summarize my role. But you know, more technically speaking, I help develop the franchise system. So obviously in franchises, there's so many different elements that has to come together, right? Your marketing plan, your development plan, your hard systems, you know, the CRMs, the learning management systems, the point of sale systems, everything that's got to beautifully integrate to give the franchisee a predictable and reliable operating system for their business. You know, I've been involved in orchestrating that entire development program for the franchise system and, of course, now also spearheading the expansion of that system across the United States. So that would be my role. But ultimately, I think the essence of it is truly cheerleading very talented people. You know, I always say I believe in hunting and not fishing when it comes to talent. You know, so you got to know exactly what you're looking for, make sure that you find people who've already done it before, you know, and come with all the resources, reputation, and experience needed to succeed. And that way, I don't need to know everything. I always tell my team, it's always first who, then what. Right? If we're struggling with something, it's because we're not asking the right person. Either we don't have the expertise internally, and we need to seek that externally to either, you know, consultants, vendors, expertise in the field, or ultimately, you know, make sure that we have that humility to look outwards. And I think that's really my role, is identifying, you know, where are those gaps and how are we going to fill those gaps with the right resources. And the right resources
yeah.
in our business is always the right person.
I think that that's probably why you're a successful leader. You've been doing this for a while. And we learn by trial and error. We learn by doing something and going, that worked really well, or I think that needs to be slightly adjusted. And that's what provides you with your success. And so when
right.
we look at
exactly.
Jet, you know, before we start talking specifically about Jet Set Pilates, I think it would be important for people to understand, because we didn't do this yet, and I think this is important. I think you should describe what Pilates is for somebody that's never heard or maybe heard the term, like maybe they've heard the term yoga or maybe they've heard the term weightlifting. But maybe people don't understand, frankly, what Pilates is exactly.
Oh, yes. No, you're right. I've met so many people who've heard about Pilates being such a popular and up-and-coming fitness application, but don't know exactly what it entails, right?
Right.
And let's start with the why. The why is really about, you know, I think what has happened in fitness is you have all these different modalities, and none of them really tie ties the body to get the body together holistically. And as we know, you can't really isolate any part of your body without impacting another part, right? And I think a lot of exercise modalities tend to create imbalances because of that. Now, the key benefit to reformer Pilates specifically, because you get two different kind of Pilates, if you want to call it that, right? Mat Pilates, which is more, you imagine yoga, but just a little bit more intense, more strength focused. So you get a mat Pilates workout. And then you get reformer Pilates. And reformer Pilates is exactly what Jet Set Pilates offers. We have a modern twist on reformer Pilates where you're on this machine that has a carriage in the middle. So the carriage is connected with these spring loads, okay? And it's all about body weight workout with different spring resistance where you're able to get a full body workout and you do focus on certain muscle groups. And the key to the exercise is that it's slow, controlled movement. And you only use your body weight with the resistance of the springs. And that way you're able to really create what we call an isometric contraction. You get typically three types of muscle contraction. Eccentric, which is the extension or the lengthening of the muscle, concentric, which is the shortening of the muscle, and then you get what you call isometric, which is the most powerful type of contraction, where the muscle is in constant tension, but it's not shortening or lengthening. So it's allowing your body to recruit a lot more muscle fibers to stabilize yourself, because frankly, if you're not stabilizing yourself on the reformer, you're going to fall off. So you're doing, for example, lunges, or you're doing a bridge or whatever the exercise might be on the reformer while you have the, having resistance from the springs, but it's all about balance and your body weight exercising, right, on a reformer in a safe and accessible environment. And the goal ultimately is for you to have a leaner, more toned muscle. And it really is the ultimate strength workout. You know, that's the thing that appealed to me. I come from now 20 years of weightlifting background. And when I tried reformer Pilates, I was so impressed. I'm like, wait a moment. I've got people of all ages, all genders around me doing the same workout I'm doing, but they don't have 20 years of weightlifting experience. And I can feel how fatigued I am. And for about a week afterwards, believe it or not, my wife was laughing at me, but I was so sore. I had proper delayed onset muscle soreness, what they call DOMS, for days where I struggled to walk properly and I felt muscles that I haven't felt for many, many years. And this comes from someone who trains 5 to 6 days a week, right? So for me to get that benefit of a workout, but in a way where I'm not lifting weights, you know, I wasn't putting any excessive stress on my ligaments, tendons, or bones. I thought it was a really accessible workout. I could see how people from the ages of 16 up to the age of 85 who do this workout and all benefit from it with a few modifications or amplifications. Anyone can train on a reformer Pilates machine. And ultimately, Jet Set Pilates really offers, I think, the most elevated experience where there's music that inspires the workout. So it's very choreographed. Every class, you know, the music and the, call it choreography of the workout itself ties in beautifully together. And it's all about flow. So you don't have this erratic movement or suddenly you're stopping. It's a constant tension exercise for 50 minutes, so just short of an hour. And the benefit to me is also the mental health aspect, which we talk so much about. You know, we have so little time for us to focus on the things that are important to us, like centering our thoughts. Right. And on a reformer machine, honestly, if you're not focused on what you're doing in this moment, right, you're going to fall off. Right. So you're always so zoned in, as I like to call it. And, you know, there's not many other opportunities in the day where I feel like you're so zoned in, which is obviously very good for your both your mind and your body. So I think that's the combination that really makes, I think, reformer Pilates the most attractive and fastest growing method of training, I think, not just in the U.S., but globally.
You know, I'm as you're speaking, I am on your website, jetsetpilates.com, and I am watching these, they happen to all be women on this particular video, but they're doing exactly what you're talking about. And I would presume, just like similar in yoga, that the breath work is also very important as you do these exercises. Would that be right?
Exactly right. Inhaling, you know, and as you contract, exhaling so you can release the tension. Breathing is so important, and that's where the meditative benefit comes from as well.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a fascinating, it's a fascinating website that you have. So let me ask you this. What makes Jet Set Pilates unique in the fitness franchise industry? What makes you guys unique? What makes you stand out?
I kind of touched on this earlier, but I think it's important to reiterate, you know, all of our playlists are consistent across all of our studios. So we have a DJ that curates the music for the choreography of the actual workout, which is really, really unique. And that creates an experience. We always talk about the Jet Set Pilates experience, not just a workout. You know, I think people come to a place, and the founder Tamara has this beautiful saying where she says that people don't know what they like until they see it or experience it. And I think Jet Set is exactly that thing, that you feel that elevation in the workout, the quality in the workout that you wouldn't find anywhere else. And I think that's what differentiates us.
That's neat. I'm looking to see your locations, and it appears that you're basically in Florida, right? It looks like you have a location in Fort Lauderdale and one in Texas, but you do have things coming. You're going to have one in Australia?
That's right. We're literally in construction at the moment in Melbourne, but you are right.
Wow.
We are founded in Miami. The brand's been around for 14 years in Miami, and we launched the franchise opportunity now a little over 2 years ago. So over 2 years, we've sold 60 units, so 6-0, and by the end of the year, we should have 20 open, and we're opening, you know, Charlotte, Charleston, Raleigh. We're opening, obviously, more in Texas, Houston. You just saw the one outside of Dallas in West McKinney. We're opening two in Manhattan, Tampa, Orlando, so really all over the place, Jacksonville. But today, as we speak, the brand is really centered in the South Florida market and expanding rapidly from there.
Wow. Well, I guess I won't be visiting anytime soon, but it would be nice to see you eventually get out to the West Coast. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes. We've got three opening in San Diego. I know that's not too close for you, but hopefully
you
can visit us in San Diego sometime soon. That's right. Yeah, we should be open by Q1 next year.
Okay, currently that isn't showing up as an upcoming location, but that just means you just haven't, updated it then. But I think you're right about the music. There's something about music and exercise that affects our mind as well as our spirit and our body. I think that's. That's really great. And while I do see that the people in this video are all women, clearly this isn't something that just women do, correct?
That's right, Marsha. I will admit that the largest part of our demographical segmentation is female, because I think females are first to market with almost everything, right? I don't think we would have airplanes if it wasn't for women. And you might say, well, let's be honest, Bert, the Wright brothers are brothers and not sisters. But ultimately, I think the desire to grow and expand, you know, women are always willing to try new things. And the benefit to this workout certainly transcends the male-female body. So both can benefit greatly from it. But around 85% of our clients today are females. And more males are attracted to the workout because of the strength training benefit and the deep muscle recruitment. So, no, definitely accessible for males as much as for females. Although I think males tend to think a little bit more of the ego, lifting weights, you know, appeases our ego a little bit more, if I can call it that.
Funny.
But, you know, those who have tried to reform a Pilates can certainly attest to the fact that it's a super tough workout, and the effectiveness of it is certainly not understated.
Well, and I mean, I could see where couples would go, come on, let's go take our Pilates class together, and we'll do it together. I mean, I could see where that could be a universal experience with couples as well. So, I mean, I don't see
that.
Yeah,
I've seen couples meet each other in reformer Pilates. It's certainly in Jet Set. I've seen people getting married to meeting each other in a Pilates class. Because, you know, if you have Pilates in common, then you know a lot about each other already.
Sure. Well, and, you know, but you also take your body very seriously. My guess is not only do you do the physical exercise, you probably are very diet conscious as well. You probably drink a lot of water. You know, you probably have a lot of habits that sustains this activity. Would you agree?
Right. You know, and this is the 360 view that I think everyone's taking in fitness, and, you know, health and fitness is so intertwined that you can't separate the one from the other. And good nutrition, including fluid intake and proper amount of protein intake, especially if you're focusing on strength workout, where you're going to have that cannibalization of the muscle fiber, right? Those proteins have to be repaired through protein synthesis. And without proper protein intake, fluid intake, you're going to be starving your body of those building blocks that you need to really get the results that you're after. So absolutely, I think the balance, I know it's kind of the biggest cliche, but, you know, you've got to balance good nutrition with a good workout. Otherwise, you end up, you know, fraying more harm than good. And I think that's almost our common knowledge, commonplace. When all those, you know what, put your running shoes on, go run, you'll be fine. Right now, they realize cardiovascular workout by itself is not good enough. You've got to combine that with strength work. You've got to combine that with good nutrition.
And I would also add there's another element there, and that is rest. I think sometimes we all get so wrapped up in all the things that we're doing that we forget that we need to also rest. And if that just means sitting quietly for 15 minutes and just meditating, or if it means you lie down because you're just going to close your eyes. But it's all, I used to work at the YMCA here locally, and I also think that, I don't think they offer Pilates there now. I mean, they definitely didn't offer it when I was working there. But there's a balance, just like you mentioned, and that nutrition, that exercise, that rest, all of those things help our brain, right? Would you say it helps our brain function better as well? Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. No, yeah. I could not have said it better. It's about that mental health and the physical health that's going to be balanced constantly.
Yeah, it's true. So let me ask you, how do you identify and nurture potential in entrepreneurs and business projects? How do you do that?
You know, Marsha, I think that it's really about finding the right fit, and to find the right fit between partners is always very tricky. I think for anyone who's ever started a business with a partner, you have to understand what your professional and cultural values are. Right. And when I say cultural, I'm talking about professional and cultural values. Right. So what are the things that are important to you that are non-negotiable? You've got to list those out, and you've got to make sure that you have a process of elimination where you can, you know, go through a discovery process with a partner where you get to learn and know each other. Right. You work through the basic information about the business plan. But more so, instead of making sure they understand the business, you want to understand how do they go about the communication style. Are they independent in thought and in action? Are they someone who can be dependent on systems and processes? So you've got to ensure that you have the right criteria for the right partner. And I think this is true for both a professional life and a personal life. We don't take a kind of criteria too seriously. We think we're going to just know when we know. You walk into someone, you think this is going to be a great life partner because my instincts tell me so. Well, we've all been misled by our instincts, because we know that our emotions can sometimes get the better of us. You know, when we're emotional, I'm a strong believer that we don't make great rational decisions, right? And for that reason, I think having a criteria of knowing exactly what type of partner fits your strengths and weaknesses is key to any successful partnership. So that would be step one. Step two is ensuring that the partnership is properly capitalized. So in other words, how much funding does the partnership require, or the business or the project require to succeed, right? And that requires proper business planning, financial planning, and then, of course, deciding on how you're going to finance the business collectively, right? And then I think finally, and something that sometimes falls through the cracks, is ensuring that you've got a proper delegation of authority, or the delegation and separation of responsibilities up front, right? I mean, we've got this matrix we use, which we call a RACI matrix. So you go RACI. Who's responsible? Who's accountable? Who's consulted? And who's informed? Every single function of the business, if you're not clear on exactly who's falling in each of these little buckets, then you're going to step on each other's toes. And what I've seen is then they create friction and conflict over time. So having that larger conversation up front avoids so many pitfalls in a partnership later down the line. But certainly, you know, we don't have a crystal ball or a magic hat, so we can't always predict perfect partnerships. But you're going to have that humility and level of flexibility to know, optimize when needed or pivot when needed. And I think it's underrated having a good partner that can do that with you when the time's right. And again, I've seen partnerships fail because they don't have, they're too rigid. They don't have the flexibility to adjust when necessary. And that might be someone swallowing their pride. So, you know, I was responsible for this, but I'm not good at it. Let me give it to you and I'll take on something else. And I think that comes back to the sense of humility that you need for that introspection that's constantly necessary to improve and optimize in the partnership.
That makes sense. So what strategies have you found that have been most effective for brand and business development in the fitness industry?
You know, there's just no replacement for building communities. If you don't have a brand or a culture in your team that empowers and cultivates a sense of community, you're not going to have a movement large enough to make a difference. That's it. I think that's how you scale a business. If you've got a concept that appeals to the market, of course you're going to have a marketing plan, right? Because if no one hears of you, then how are they going to be able to benefit from your concept? But ultimately, I believe that marketing tells you if you've got a good or bad product, right? If your marketing's not working, sure, you might optimize it, pivot. Maybe you're not working with the right digital strategy. Maybe you're not focusing on the local guerrilla marketing that the competitors aren't willing to do. I'm a big believer in doing what your competitors aren't willing to do, right? Because that's what sets you apart. But, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work. People aren't buying. And that's a function of maybe not the right product market fit. And that's the hardest thing to accept, because that means you've got to go back to the drawing board and swallow your pride and, you know, absorb a lot of sunk costs ultimately. So I do believe that it's easy to say, you know, these are the ways you scale your business. This is how you do proper business development. But that's all on the preface that you have a foundation where you have a strong product that's marketable. I know that a lot of people create a makeable product so they can make it, but they can't market it. And if they market it, people don't come. And to me, I'm more interested in something that's marketable and we can figure out how to make it. So it's almost like a paradigm shift that you're going to go through. I think a lot of people stumble into a product. Engineers do this all the time, right? Oh, I can solve this problem with this product, but they don't know if the problem is big enough to work, that it's even worth solving to begin with, right? And that comes down to proper market research and ensuring that the product market fit, also ensuring you have a way to get it to market through the proper distribution channel. So, you know, developing a mini business plan is key to any success. So I've seen that time and time again where people just wing it and then they spend a lot of money and ultimately, you know, broken hearts and broken bank accounts are typically follow.
Do you think, how important do you think feedback is in something like this?
It's everything. But I would say there's only one thing that's more important, and ensuring you get the feedback from the right people. Because I've seen where you get feedback from people who are trying to please you. Or people who's just so scared of your risk, your mom and dad, your family. You know, I always love it when they're afraid for you, because that means you're doing the right thing, from my experience, because they're always going to be risk averse, right? However, you can't get good advice from people who's not done it before, right? Maybe not exactly what you've done, but maybe in the industry, maybe in the market segment that you're interested in, you've got to be willing to seek out those experts, you know, otherwise you're going to make mistakes that have been solved before. Which is part of my biggest lesson, is I always want to reinvent the wheel, because that's where the arrogance came in, right? It's like, oh, I can do it better than anyone. Instead of learning from their successes and failures, I try to reinvent it, which obviously comes with a lot of hardship and ultimately a lot of bloody nerds and school fees that I had to
pay. I imagine. So I bet that you have some success stories, and I'm a story collector, and I would love to hear about some success stories from your franchises that particularly stand out for you, because I think that's interesting.
Oh, yes. I've got the most beautiful story, I would say, is our owner in Fort Lauderdale, who opened her business last year in October. You know, she was so passionate about the brand that for many years she drove, and I don't know if you're familiar with the South Florida market, but it's around, like, with traffic, 45 minutes to an hour from Fort Lauderdale all the way to Miami. And she drove both ways and passed probably, it can't be less than 50 other reformer Pilates concepts that she could have trained at, right? But she believes so much in the brand, and this is the only workout that resonated with her for all the reasons I told you earlier. And ultimately, she was the first franchisee. She's like knocking our door down. She's like, when you have filed your FDD, she's your franchise disclosure document, you're ready to start franchises, I want to be the first in. And today, as we speak, you know, she generates $50,000 in free cash flow, in profit a month.
How much?
Right?
Say again.
Which is $50,000, right?
Okay.
So that's a $600,000 a year in profit that she generates from a business that only cost her about $600,000 to start. And she's not even open for a year yet. In October 16th this year, she'll be open for a year. So that's such a great success story, because you have this founding franchisee who was so committed to the business, to the concept. She believed more than anyone else, and now she's reaping the rewards for it. Now, the most astounding thing is her age. And again, I don't want to give her age away, but I can tell you that she's much, much younger than I am, and I'm 36. So I think I must have a decade, 36.
You're 36.
I must have a decade on her. That's right. I'm 36,
wow,
and
young.
I must have a decade on her. And imagine being 26, and again, I'm not giving an exact age away, but certainly
right, but
she's young. Yeah, and she's making incredible money for herself. And, you know, it's just so inspirational to see someone who was a client, so passionate, believed before anyone else did. And she came to us and said, listen, I know Jets are going to be huge, and I want to be the first in. And she did that based on zero proof, right? Zero proof, just an inner belief, something she could not put a finger exactly upon, but she knew that this is unique, sexy, it's elevated, and the rest of the world wants to experience this. And she was really, I think, gave us the confidence. You know, as much as we always feel like we give back to our franchise partners, we almost get more in return from them. And I think great partnerships have that dynamic. You know, I know you and I spoke extensively about your family, you know, when we met the first time, and I just loved your stories because I could just hear how much your kids and your entire family has given back to you as much as you commit and you will do anything for them. It's just clear to me that it's always that reciprocation that creates a balanced relationship and a healthy relationship. And it's almost the same is true for our franchise partners. Yes, we give them systems, training, support, but the learnings we get from it, the validation we get from them is maybe equal, if not more important than what we offer them in return. And then they end up becoming these amazing peer groups who learn from each other. That's the most underrated aspect of franchising, the ability to learn from other operators who are in your shoes.
Well, I think people probably just shook their heads slightly when you said you were only 36 years old, and the amount of success you've received in those 36 years is unbelievable. Obviously, you weren't doing this when you were two. So it's remarkable. And I guess I'd like to know, how do you cultivate a leadership-centric environment within your companies?
That's a fantastic question, Marcia. And I think, you know, there are so many ways of doing it. And I think every leader has his own style. I can only speak to my own, but really understanding, again, those value systems for each leader in the organization. You know, so we've got very specific values. And I think one of the values that stand out for me, and I don't want to speak about each of them because I can go through eight different ones and they all are very meaningful to us, but being willing to pay the cost of leadership. I think the cost of leadership, most people don't speak about it. They speak about what it takes to be a good leader, but they don't speak about what it costs to be a good leader. So I'll take a second and speak a little bit to what it costs to be a good leader, because I think it's just something people don't speak enough about, right? And I think the reason they don't speak about it is because it's a bit of a voodoo topic, because mostly to be a good leader, it requires you to do things that might negatively impact people that you care about, right? And make decisions that might impact people that you care about, you know? So the cost of leadership, I think, is one thing I speak about a lot. It's also about being willing to be disliked despite your best attempt to do the best for the most. And in franchising, that is very, very true, where a lot of times you make decisions that franchisees might not agree with because they have obviously a localized view on some of the decisions you make, which of course broadly affect the entire franchise network. So in their viewpoint, they might feel like, you know, what you're doing is not in their best interest, where from our perspective, we want to do what is best for most, and that means sometimes we need to be willing to be the bad guy. Right. And then also a lot of times leaders are, you know, will be misunderstood and not always have the opportunity to defend themselves and the decisions. Right. And you're going to be willing to pay that price. So those three things I think is underrated in leadership. The cost of leadership is expensive. Upsetting people you care about, you know, making decisions that is the best for most, but despite that, people will still dislike you or feel like you've done something to personally negatively affect them. And then, you know, again, as I said earlier, you'll likely be a misunderstood and not always have the opportunity to explain yourself. And I will also say there are kind of four levels of, or stages of leadership, I should rather say. You know, so it's important to deploy your leadership style accordingly. You know, you can't throw people in the deep end and expect them to perform the way you want them to perform. So I believe strongly in that four stages of I do, you watch, I do, you help, you do, I help, now you do, I cheer. Now, if you remember, we started at the very beginning, I told you I feel like a cheerleader. It's because we've gone through these stages with my leaders in the departments where, you know, they've been around me to see how I do it. I've seen how they do it. I've helped them make adjustments and ask them where I can help. And ultimately, now I'm in a position where I can just be a cheerleader. And they've learned to do things better than I could ever dream to do them, since that's their sole focus. So, yeah, I think that's... it's a loaded question, but I hope that answers it for you.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I feel the cheerleader within you. So what advice would you give to someone who's looking to start their own franchise business?
Proper due diligence. That's number one. Understand what questions to ask. And in franchising, it's beautiful because the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, regulates the franchise industry. And the franchisor is required to issue what it calls a franchise disclosure document, or called an FDD for short. Now, the FDD, if you know how to read it, it's an intimidating document. But what you need to look at is just the core things. You want to look at the experience of the franchisor. That's item number two. Like, it's right up there. Easy to look at. Who are they? What's their background? What have they done? And why should I trust them as leaders, right? Item number six and seven, what are the initial and ongoing fees? What's the investment requirements, right? Item number three, have they been in litigation before? I would like to know that, right? If they've been sued by other franchisees or by other partners, right? They're required to disclose that. And if you know where to spot check, you can easily go check exactly what litigation they've been involved with. And that could be a cautionary story for you, right? And then item 19, you know, that is where the performance disclosure is. So if you want to know, how is the franchise system performing, go straight to item 19. They will tell you, first of all, what is the franchisor willing to disclose? And by the way, what he's willing to disclose tells you a lot about it, what he's not willing to disclose in terms of financial performance. And then I would also recommend item 20, which is telling you, listen, how much growth is there in the system? How many terminations have there been? How many closures have there been? And collectively, that tells you the story. Right? It tells you who they are, what are their backgrounds, what it will cost me for upfront, ongoing. And, you know, how well are other people doing in the system? You know, have they opened? Have they closed? How many are going to open? And that gives you a health sentiment or a health check on the entire franchise system. And then I think another interesting viewpoint is also looking at the franchisor's balance sheet. He's required to disclose it to you to ensure that he's properly capitalized to finance the support and training he's obligated to give you as a franchisee. So, again, asking the right questions. But fortunately, it's already answered within the FTD. So if you know how to read the FTD document, I highly recommend working with a business consultant or a broker who's reviewed these things multiple times that can teach you how to review it yourself.
That makes sense. So how do you balance the innovation with maintaining a proven system in your franchise?
Now, that's the ultimate question, Marsha. I love that question because, you know, it's always this balance between innovation and consistency that has this contradiction with each other. And you end up fighting innovation because everyone wants what the known. What they have done before is predictable, and they're very scared of innovation because innovation means change. And we don't like change as human beings fundamentally. So I think it comes, again, to the culture. You know, you've got to embrace things that are going to move the business forward, because if it stays the same, it's actually going backwards. There's no the same in franchising, right? Without new development, the brands will go backwards. So if you embrace a culture of constant and never-ending improvement, that is the key to having a successful franchise brand. So, and I will encourage any entrepreneur to view it that way, right? Because we all like to think we're perfect. We all like to think there's very little improvement. But if you have that calm eye mentality, that constant, never-ending achievement mentality, that's what's going to compel you to succeed and to outmuscle your competitors over time.
Makes sense. So what role do you think that the community impact plays in your business strategy, and how do you foster that?
I mentioned it earlier briefly, Marsha, but I think without a community, you have nothing. You know, it could be your client community, your franchise community. And you know, it's about, again, and I keep coming back to why you do what you do. If you're clear on the why, you're going to attract advocates and fans who will go spread the message on your behalf because they buy into the fundamental values. And, you know, there's a great book about this by Simon Sinek called Start With Why. And I'm sure you might have heard about it, and some of your audience certainly would have read it themselves because it's such a popular book. But it all speaks about that people don't buy what or how you do things. They buy why you do things, right? And some brands are just excellent at conveying that message, right? So it's like, you know, think about Apple, right? If you think about Apple, you know, their founder's mindset was all about making a dent in the universe. That was ultimately his why, right? And everything he's ever done. Steve Jobs obviously is synonymous with Apple as a brand, but ultimately he's not here with us today, but his legacy transcends his life, right? And it transcends it because everything he did by focusing on why he did it first before he decided on what and how to do it. And I think it's a difficult thing to do because we all are rational human beings, and we believe we are, right? So we want to make decisions with rational thought, with, you know, and that lives in a different part of your brain, your neurocortex, the outer edges. And Simon Sinek writes extensively about this, where your human sapient brain, if you think about your limbic cortex, right, your limbic brain's right in the middle of kind of the smallest part of your brain, but also the oldest part of your brain. And that's where feelings exist, where the why exists. And ultimately, that's where people make decisions. They make decisions from how they feel. And they don't make decisions from the rational thoughts. And if you're not able to tap into people's feelings, you're not going to be effective. And if you ask me how to tap into people's feelings effectively, then it's about storytelling. You know, and storytelling is ultimately sharing your why. Why am I in business? What is important? What are the values of this product or brand? Right? What is it that is important to me? And I don't care if other people frown upon it. I won't change it. Right? And if you don't have a strong why, I don't think you can succeed in business. That's
that makes sense to me. So let me ask you, how did your early life experiences shape your business philosophy and approach?
You know, I a lot of times I've thought about this because I have this fear that I will forget why I succeeded before and I'll make the same mistakes again, right? And a lot of people forget that the successes aren't as obvious, or the reasons for the successes aren't as obvious as they might appear at first, right? And I've had to go think about it. And I would never forget this story where, you know, I say story, and it's a story of my life and a true story, but my mother used to be a traffic officer, you know, writing fines to people. You know, back in the 90s, that was very frowned upon for women to do that. And obviously you have night shifts and morning shifts, so late nights, and we used to sleep in kind of kindergarten schools that have overnight sleeping arrangements. So my sister and I am all too familiar with my mom's kind of immense schedule and working, you know, demands on her. And I could never figure out why she's working so hard, but I've really never seen the fruits of that labor, right? She's always struggling to pay rent, running out of fuel next to the road with the car with kids, you know. We used to drive with my mom in the traffic car because, and that's a federal vehicle, right? So you can't actually travel your kids in it. But we used to hide underneath the passenger seat, right? Just so no one sees us. My mom never had a car. And in seeing my mom go through that, and this is all due respect to my mom, and seeing her go through those struggles, I always wanted to know, what do other people know that she did not know, right? Because clearly she struggled more than the average person. Sure, being a single mother doesn't make it any easier, but certainly there was a strategy, and this is what I learned later in my life, is that effort alone is not good enough. You have to combine effort with strategy, right? And that means having a proper business plan, having wisdom, knowing when to ask the right question and asking the right person for the things that you don't know. And that strategy applied with effort ultimately equals success in battle. But it cannot stand alone. Strategy without extreme ownership and action you're also not going to succeed. But the other way around is also true.
That makes sense. What are your future goals for Jet Set Pilates and your other business ventures?
To make a meaningful impact, really. I know it's such a cliche, Marsha, but, you know, I think you can make a meaningful impact at any scale, right? If you have one brick-and-mortar business or coaching business online, I believe if you impact a handful of people in a meaningful way, that could really change your life and their life. You have succeeded. So I think you've got to define what success looks like for you. Like for me, it's really about empowering the entrepreneurial spirit, you know, to remove those obstacles to success. That's kind of my life goals, to see potential and to add value. That's the short end of it. And whatever shape and form that comes in, I am passionate about that. But in Jet Set specifically, the vision is to bring this to all communities across the United States and eventually beyond into the global community. And we see probably somewhere around 600 locations in the U.S. over the next 5 to 7 years. We believe that there's enough scale for that. There's enough demand for that. And people certainly want it in their communities. We get a lot of people coming to Miami or South Florida and tell us, I live in New York, I live in Texas, I live on the West Coast, and why aren't you there? And that's kind of what inspires us to expand to those markets, to bring it to their homes, so to speak. So that's kind of the call it big, hairy, audacious goal, right, is to have 600 units across the United States and ultimately have Jet Set Pilates in all the jet-setting cities across the world, the Milans, the Madrids, the Londons of the world. And, you know, we feel like our clients travel the world, and we want to be where they are. So that would be our big, hairy, audacious goal. But on a personal level, as I said, to see potential and add value, that's the way I see my life and my contribution.
That's wonderful. You know, I'm thinking about your lifestyle. I don't really know. I don't know if you're married with children. Do you have a family?
I do, Marsha. I have the beautiful kids. My kids are 11, 14, and 17. Would you believe it?
Wow. So they're watching you. They are definitely watching you, even sometimes when you don't realize they're watching you, because you are leading by example and your efforts and your success. And it doesn't come without effort. You mentioned that. There's a lot of effort that goes into what you're doing. It's not like you clock in at 8 o'clock in the morning and you clock out at 5 o'clock at night, Monday through Friday. That isn't how it works. So are your children equally interested in the physicality of life as well?
They really are. I will say that's the one privilege of working within the fitness and health industry. You know, my kids can see us in action. You know, I go train every day. When my daughter, for example, on the holidays works for Jet Set, she's able to actually, you know, see us at work and get passionate about what we do. So I think it's so important that the kids are involved with their parents' work. And, you know, at least just, I'm not saying to the degree that, for example, my daughter is, because she loves customer service and she loves taking calls and sending texts and she's always communicating with clients, you know, and helping at front desk at a studio. But, you know, at any capacity, if you can have your kids see you being passionate and doing hard work, you know, they will do what you show them. They won't do what you tell them. And I think if they see you working hard and they see you being passionate about something that is good for you, you know, having professional success and having a healthy mind and body, what can be more important to life, right? Other than, I guess, the only thing more important perhaps is your relationship. And also they continue having those relationships with clients and developing relationships, which is also so important to us. So I think so the kids benefit greatly from that. But at the same time, you know, as a workaholic, I think that my kids also miss out on a lot of opportunity where I don't always have a great work-life balance. And I think all entrepreneurs could attest to this. You know, you've got to almost have imbalance to create something extraordinary. I mean, you just saw the Olympics, right? Like, I'm certain you've picked up that none of those people have a balanced lifestyle. Like, they train incredibly hard, right? They certainly don't go out with their friends at the same cadence and socialize and eat the same way that the average person is eating and, you know, training. And that's why they've had extreme success, because of their extreme patterns and behavior. Right? And ultimately, our patterns and habits determines who we are. And that's also true in business. So I think there's always a price to pay for the money you make. And again, I said it earlier, there's also a price to pay to leadership, but there's also a price to pay for the money you make, you know, the time spent away from family, the stress, the risks you manage. And you can't abdicate that as a business owner. You've got to make sure that you own that. And ultimately, you live and die by your decisions. And I think that's what makes it so rewarding, but at the same time, so challenging.
So we've talked about balance. And you've just mentioned, you know, a very long work day for yourself. So how do you balance that professional side of your life and that personal side of your life? Do you get out in nature? Do you grab a camera and go take pictures of birds? How do you balance that part of your life?
Marsha, my wife would literally call you up and tell you he absolutely talk rubbish on your show if I told you because I really don't. I think I try and create balance through reading more, training often, and I think that sets some balance in play, but certainly I'm not the most balanced person in the world, but some reading and training creates a level of balance at least that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
I'm going to ask you one last question that you were not prepared to hear. But I love this question, and I don't think there's any reason that you wouldn't be able to answer that. And that is, knowing what you know today, what advice would you give your younger self?
I would remind myself that, Bert, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. So slow down, take it in, but more planning, measure twice, cut once. That would be my advice to myself.
That's good advice. And you know, sometimes we are so wrapped up in what we're doing that we forget to just take a deep breath, to just stand and silent and just lower those shoulders. I always joke with people, these shoulders are not supposed to be earrings. You know, bring those shoulders down.
Right.
Take a deep breath. I tell you, I don't know that you were aware of this. I did a Facebook Live prior to our podcast. I always do that on Facebook. And I'm prepared for that, so I know what I want to say. Just before I started that Facebook Live, we had a major earthquake. Some places it was on the Richter scale of 4.4. Other places somebody said it was 4.7. It literally shook my house. And I thought, holy cow, it's been a while since I have actually physically felt an earthquake like that, because it's not uncommon. But still, I mean, it was just like, man, it's just Mother Earth saying, you know, be prepared. Be prepared in whatever it is you're doing, whether it's in your work, whether it's in insurance in your home, whatever that might be, go check your refrigerator. Is it still working? You know, all of these things that we just sometimes take for granted can change. And we've had a lot of fires out here, and that certainly has affected a lot of people. You know, weather can certainly affect people. But I think balance is so important. And I know for myself, people say, I don't know how you do all the things that you do. You're doing so many things. And I said, well, it's true. Yes, podcasting, it takes a lot of effort. It's a hobby. I don't monetize this. I do this because I love it. I'm a big sports fan, so I'm involved in attending a lot of sporting events. I'm also in Rotary, so I'm a Rotarian. I have a lot of activities that keep me, as a widowed woman, extremely, I don't want to say busy, because busy has the wrong sound to it, but I would say involved, and I'm also very grateful for the lifestyle that I'm able to live and to have such wonderful guests like yourself join me every week. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Bert, and I know that people do call you Bert. Thank you for just taking the time to share what's so meaningful and important to you today. I've really learned a lot from listening to you.
Thank you, Marsha. It means a lot to me coming from you. And I will just say, you know, in speaking to you the first time, I was also just so encouraged by your life story. And so it was so easy for me to share a little bit about my life. And hopefully it's you know, at the very least, maybe one thing was taken away from one listener today that could be meaningful to them in their lives. So I'm encouraged and grateful for that opportunity. Thanks, Marcia.
You're very, very welcome. And I just want to wish you a pleasant day, the rest of the day in Miami. I know it's approaching the dinner hour for you, but I just want to say thank you. Thank you for spending this time with me. I will be uploading this podcast so that people can listen to it across any podcast app that they listen to, and I hope that they appreciate it as much as I did this conversation, because it was stellar. So thanks once again for being my guest. I will let you get on with your day now. And everybody, don't forget, I'll be here again next week. Bye for now, everybody.
This summer, skip the shuttle to the rideshare lot at LAX and get picked up curbside in a luxury SUV. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto. We've redefined your airport ride with professional employee drivers, a consistent fleet of SUVs, and plenty of luggage space in every Alto. Take your time with your bags. Your Alto will always wait as long as you need, and the first 5 minutes are on us. Try your first ride free with code SUMMER. Download the Alto app or visit ridealto.com/radio to learn more.
Hey there, it is Ryan Seacrest with you. You want to make this summer unforgettable? Join me at Chumba Casino. It's this summer's hottest online destination. They are rolling out the red carpet with an amazing welcome offer just for you. So don't wait. Dive in now and play hundreds of social casino games for free. Your chance to redeem real prizes is just a spin away. Care to join me?
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.